Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in 3 facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
That's exactly right. That man, because I actually knew who it was, wanted closeness with his wife. And he was missing that part of the relationship. And we all know that can be a very important part of either a partner's life, the addict's life, or the coupleship. But understandably, you got to do the hard work of improving communication, building trust, and finding other ways to be close. And so that's going to be my question for you today. What can you do to find closeness? What's necessary to bring together that opportunity for growth together? Now, you know, it's interesting because I worked with a woman today and she said, you know, I don't necessarily feel close to my husband. As a matter of fact, we've been doing this couples work and it's becoming even clearer to me that he's probably not right for me. We probably would have gone our separate ways even if this betrayal had not happened. And you know, there's always that chance that that could happen. So I want to ask yourself honestly, you know, is this marriage salvageable? And how might I begin to look at what I can do to contribute to my marriage? That is emotionally mature, it's responsible, and it shows that you recognize that a marriage is not just one person's issue. It is, you know, certainly the betrayal is his responsibility, and we're going to hold him accountable for that. But a marriage has to have 2 people working in it. And there are a lot of partners that are so deceived, they're so angry, they're so heartsick, that they kind of shut down and they say, I'm not doing anything. He's going to have to prove it to me. And so they don't contribute in a healthy way towards their relationship because they understandably feel like he owes them. And there's no doubt in my mind that an addict in good recovery gets that he's got to make it up to her. He never will be able to. But he's got to do the things that he needs to do to build the relationship. He needs to take the initiative. He needs to have find the incentives for her to trust him again. However, if you are 6 months, 9 months, 1 year, 2 years into the trauma, and you are still together, I'm going to ask you, what can you do to contribute towards a relationship? Because here's what I believe, and this is what I have said in marital therapy my whole life. We either make the choice to contribute to our relationship or we contaminate it. And there is no doubt that he contaminated the relationship. No doubt. And then it gives you trauma brain. And involuntarily, you may be contributing towards contamination too, because of your rage, because of your fear, because of your executive functioning going offline. But as you begin to get more stabilized and you begin to center yourself, understandably, you begin to be able to say, now, how can I contribute to this relationship in a healthy way? Maybe that's doing a check-in. You know, maybe that check-in, you're busy, you're tired, you're worn out, but you make it your own by always participating in that daily or 3 times a week check-in, because it is a way to communicate and to develop some closeness. Maybe you take the risk and you allow him to hold your hand in bed, to put his foot on your foot, to spoon you. I don't know what it takes to move a little bit closer physically and sit with the discomfort and see if you can work yourself out of it. You see, John Gottman, a marital therapist, said that stalemating in a relationship contaminates the relationship. And I get that if you're stalemating because you're afraid and because you're unsure and unclear, it may be very, very difficult for you to move forward. I just had a woman today who said, I know I need to move forward, but I'm afraid to. I don't know that I want to. More than that, I don't know if I even want to work on the marriage. Okay, those are all honest feelings, and you may have had those too. Today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Kristen Hollenbeck, and she is a master at helping people work through their issues in a coupleship. And what she and I both know is that oftentimes when discovery has occurred, the couple can be very neglectful or abusive as a result of the discovery, as a result of the sexual betrayal. You know, lives have been turned upside down, and it's hard to engage in healthy behaviors when really you're so angry, you're so hurt, that it's easy to want to abuse one another. Name call, you know, scream, tell the kids bad things about the other person, you know, do all those horrible behaviors that show that you're experiencing anger and trauma, you know, that addiction has ravaged your relationship, that there may be some narcissism. You know, we always say sex addiction is a selfish, selfish disease. And then there are plenty of clinicians and coaches who say on top of that, if you mix addiction with narcissism, boy, that gives very little hope for empathy. So, Dr. Crystal is certified to treat people struggling with this addiction, and she does that from an individual, couples, or partner status. She's going to discuss how abuse and neglect and even violence can be addressed in the recovery process so that both people can provide each other with safety for healing and recovery. And so this is going to be an interesting show, because if you're a partner, there's probably a 60 to 70% chance that you have done something since discovery that you thought was unconscionable and unfathomable because you're in a trauma state. Maybe you woke up in the middle of the night and you just slapped your husband. Or maybe you were sitting there on the couch and he tried to hug you and you pushed him away violently. You know, they're just things that you never thought you would do, but you're in a real traumatized state. So we need to get you back online and get you to feeling healthy again. because if there's a lot of abuse or neglect in the relationship, boy, the coupleship is more and more difficult to navigate. Now, speaking of navigation, I got to tell everybody that my book came out. You know, it's that workbook for sex addicts called Help, period, Her, period, Heal. And it is an opportunity for sex addicts to learn how to do empathy. It's a workbook for sex addicts to develop empathy skills so that they can help their partner heal. So it's really kind of for both of you, but it's really for him, because it is hard for men to know how to empathize. And then, even if they have the skill, when a betrayal has occurred and it's been discovered, it is very difficult for a man to find empathy, because what he's really doing is reacting to all the trauma and drama that he caused. And then I got a lot of men that said, Carol, I never learned empathy to begin with. And now to have to do it with somebody who doesn't trust me, this is tough. You can get that on Amazon.com, or you can go to SanosPress.com. That's S-A-N-O-S, Press.com, my publishing company. And I got to tell you, all my fellow clinicians and coaches have got the book, and I'm still waiting on my copies. Of course, I ordered 50 of them. But I haven't even gotten to see it in its totality. So I hope that you'll take a look at it, just see if it would work for your family. Again, that's on Amazon, and it's called Help, period, Her, period, Heal. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and I'm the author. All right. You know, I have been telling people all over the place what a blessing it is to get to do this show. One, because I learn so much from my expert couples and partners and authors and clinicians and coaches. But also, it's hard to keep up on this stuff. This stuff changes all the time. You know, I was coaching somebody. She was a clinician herself. And she presented me two very serious cases where the husband lacked empathy and could not even begin to acknowledge his wife's pain. And that is what empathy is all about. It's acknowledging the pain, because I've done this long enough to know that that is one of the number one needs a partner has. She wants to know that the sex addict gets her pain. And so truly what I know is that empathy is something that can be learned, but you have to be strong enough to want to learn it. And I'm oftentimes working with my partners, helping them to see when the spouses are doing good, solid recovery work. You know, they're kind of scared to trust it. They're not sure they can. And so I get to help validate that I'm seeing the same thing too. Now, the truth of the matter is, sure, we can be duped. But I get the blessing of working in this field with other addicts who come in and say, you know what, I want what Tom has. He's so solid. He gives such great advice. He's really empathetic to his wife, and he seems to have it all together. I want to get to that point. Well, if somebody's deceiving their wife and their therapist, it's possible that they could go to the group and just be the model group member. I mean, that could be part of their deception. But I tend to default to, I'm going to believe it. I'm going to believe it as long as I can. And, of course, you know me. I do the work where I typically encourage at least a polygraph every 6 months to a year, after somebody's in good recovery, just to prove to the partner that things are what she sees is what she can believe. So there's always that little extra proof, if you will, or evidence, if you will, that one is really trying and that they can believe one day at a time that what is in front of them is more than likely for real. And you know, I never thought I would be in a business where I would recommend polygraphs. I never ever thought that could ever happen. And now I just see them as very helpful. And I just hope that you have somebody in your community that you can trust that can do that too. All right. So again, we've got an amazing guest on our show today, Dr. Kristen Hollenbeck, and she's going to be talking about the abuse and neglect cycle that can occur when partner betrayal is discovered and while people are beginning to work on their issues. So, Dr. Crystal, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, Carol. I'm doing really well today, and I wanted to congratulate you on your new book. What a great resource.
Oh, thank you very much. I feel really blessed to do it. Everybody that knows me goes, oh, my gosh, I feel like I'm in therapy with you. It sounds just like you're talking to me in the office. And so that's what I really wanted it to be. And so I'm excited that that got transferred in the publication. So I'm excited
Wonderful.
To be talking to you because, you know, there is abuse and neglect that occurs in partner betrayal and sex addiction, and it can feel so scary to everybody involved. Tell me a little bit about what you have seen in the field of sexual addiction and partner betrayal that shows abusive or neglectful behavior.
Well, you know, both people who enter into sex addiction treatment, both of them are traumatized. Both of their worlds are being turned upside down. And it's very common, in fact, in most couples, if not all that I see, there's going to be some form or multiple forms of abuse taking place. You know, think about it. You've got two people that are angry, that are shocked, traumatized, a lot of change is taking place, a lot of fear is happening. So what happens usually is we see a lot of abuse with the person being treated for the addiction as well as the partner. Abuse is really just simply mistreatment, right? It's just really abusing your power in the relationship. I see the person struggling with addiction, you know, they can gaslight, and you've talked a lot about gaslighting on your show. They're really trying to change your perception of reality because they really are trying to avoid accountability themselves, of taking responsibility, of breaking through their own denial. So they're constantly causing chaos. They'll cause chaos with communication. It's very difficult to have a conversation with them at times. You know, oftentimes the partner will say, oh my gosh, they make me feel crazy. You know, they'll say this or that or this, or I can't have a conversation with them. Or they love to say, oh, I forgot, or I didn't say it that way, or no, that didn't happen. Or, you know, they give you that little kernel of truth. So we see in the beginning, there's a lot of gaslighting. There's a lot of breaking through denial for both. Right? The partner is having to understand and be educated about what sex addiction is. The addict is having to be educated about what it is. So I see the most amount of abuse take place at the very beginning. A lot of chaos, a lot of abuse. And then, you know, neglect is a form of abuse. So if we look at passive and aggressive, I remember reading a quote from Mother Teresa, and she said, neglect is the worst form of abuse. And, you know, neglect says you don't matter, you're not important. I know you have a need, but I'm not going to meet it. And so where neglect comes up a lot of times with the addict, Carol, I think even your new resource out with your book about empathy, it's so important for both to understand empathy, but especially for the addict to understand empathy for their partner. who is really suffering from PTSD usually. So they're not themselves. They feel crazy. They're very angry. And we teach them, the addict, we teach them how to stay calm and be empathetic to understand what their partner's going through. On the other side of that, although it's not fair and it's not right, the partner who's been traumatized, they also have to understand what empathy is toward the person struggling with addiction, right? This person that they've fallen in love with. I say to every couple probably that sees me, I have to educate the partner to say, you have fallen in love with someone who's an addict, right? And understanding the complexity of that and getting educated on it. So understanding that they're not a horrible person, but boy, they've done some really horrible things, right, through addiction. And so I'm looking forward to using your book as a resource there, but we can see how both can be abusive and usually right at the beginning of therapy.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Crystal, that you said that, because I remember when I was getting my training with Dr. Patrick Carnes through ITAP, and that made me be a CSAT, and you're a CSAT also, so you get it. He said that when you look at childhood wounds, neglect is by far more damaging than abuse. And that really substantiates what you said. If there's been a lot of neglect in a relationship, either before discovery or as a result of the discovery, there is so much disconnection that partners won't know what to believe, what is real, what is true, and what can come out of this kind of chaos and trauma. And you're right, I see it too. The more aggressive behavior occurs at the beginning, I believe it's because their brain does go offline and they have that prefrontal cortex issue. Now, I really truly think that it scares the partner to death to see herself go to that extreme. They didn't even know that they had abuse in them. But when it comes to neglect, they're so self-protected because they don't want to get hurt again. They can neglect the relationship because it's a form of self-protection. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. There's just 1,000 thoughts running through the partner's mind. And, you know, they're understanding how they've been neglected. A lot of times they've experienced abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse and neglect throughout the marriage, but they never really understood what was going on, or they minimized, or they believed the lies that their addict spouse is telling them. And so once they actually start to get the truth, and you and I both have talked about this a lot, that a partner needs truth and safety, right? Their whole world is turned upside down. They realize, I don't even know who you are. I don't even know who I'm married to. A lot of times they're getting that staggered disclosure, which, again, I think causes chaos. That's when the addict partner is giving a little bit of information, then a little bit more, or telling lies, and just this constant crazy making interaction with the partner who's just desperate to know what in the world is going on. I've had partners become physically abusive, people who would never even think of hitting someone or harming someone, and they just go into rages. And you're right, they don't know who they are anymore. They're having all of these feelings come up. I think intimate betrayal is the worst type of betrayal. And the reason for that is when you're married to someone, you really believe that they love you, that they're going to protect you, that they're going to be honest with you. And when you find out that the person who's supposed to be the closest to you and value you the most is the one that's actually harmed you the most, you just don't know what to do with that. And, of course, that's the trauma part of it. Your brain can't even take that in. It takes it in fragmented pieces, all of that information. And so you're right, Carol. I've seen the partner just get to the place where they just don't even know what to do. And then, of course, the addict, the person struggling with the addiction, they're very frustrated, and they're still in denial a lot of times at the beginning of treatment. You know, they're minimizing, and it takes them a while to get educated on sex addiction and break through that denial and take full responsibility, because the addict brain really practices justification. And then we know what happens in the brain itself is the brain takes on that we're not normal if we're not acting out. And so it's a addiction process is a very powerful process. And so it takes a while for both to break through denial, to get educated, and then to have to take individual responsibility for the way they're treating each other through this sex addiction treatment journey.
Yeah, and you know, obviously this can happen by a variety of names, and right now we're talking about abuse, and you call it relational abuse. So again, if you were going to look at that, how does it show up for the addict? And I heard you saying that may look like gaslighting, denying, projecting onto the partner. They're all kind of defense mechanisms to keep the partner from understanding the truth. They don't think that they'll be loved if she really knows all the horrible things that have happened. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I also think that the addict is very fearful that their wife is going to leave them. I mean, I've never done disclosure with any person who, you know, the fear of the addict is that they're going to leave. Once she finds out, and I'm just using he for the pronoun right now for the addict, but once she finds out what I've done, there's no way she's going to be able to forgive me. There's no way she's going to stay in the marriage. You know, they have a lot of fear, which drives their lying and their deceit, which is, you know, part of our job as therapists to help them work through that through education, skills, building their own sense of self with having to tell the truth and what that looks like, and also preparing them that, yes, your wife could leave you, but you're never going to be able to walk in recovery and walk in the integrity of who you are until you learn to tell the full truth. But that's a process for them. And, you know, they also become very aggressive, not just the neglect, but I will see the addict really show up with power and control. You know, that's that string of narcissism that comes with addiction. They're going to be, you know, they've been in this marriage for a while where they've kept secrets, they've shown up, and they're usually, you know, looked at as being admired in the community, maybe within their family. And so they're used to having this power and control without accountability. Now all of a sudden they've got to be fully accountable, which is very challenging. And then things are out of their control, which, you know, of course that's delusional. Nobody really has control of anything. But they feel like they're losing control, right? They're having to be accountable to their partner. They're having to face the truth of a lot of things that they've hidden, all of their fears. I've seen them become violent. So violence is also like breaking objects, punching a door, punching a wall. I've had a addict who punched a dent in a stainless steel refrigerator, slammed their fist, raised their voice, you know, yelling, screaming, shutting down their partner when they're trying to talk. All of that is abusive behavior. Also, they'll withdraw, you know, okay, I won't talk to you for several days. Or, you know, they like to manipulate with their words. They'll say, oh, well, you know, I'm just not happy. Or, well, if you wouldn't talk about that, then I wouldn't have to be so angry. You know, that's hard for me. You know, that blaming, that shifting that goes on. But all of that is abuse and neglect. And, of course, the partner does the same thing. A lot of times I see something that's very common that the partner will call the addict names. Right, call them names, yell and scream, or they'll completely shut down and don't want to talk to them at all, don't want anything to do with them at all. And a lot of these behaviors we understand, but we also have to educate our clients that this is abusive and neglective behaviors, and they have to be addressed in a healthy way.
Well, you know, I 100% agree with you there. And like you said, it's our jobs as clinicians and even coaches to help them find their inner strength to do it differently. And And I think for a lot of couples, they're looking for tools and for skills that they can utilize to be less abusive or neglectful. And so what kinds of tools and skills do you use with clients that have a lot of abuse or neglect?
Well, I think it's very important for every couple entering into treatment, Carol, that they really seek a therapist who has credentials, right? I happen to have all three credentials, but you definitely want to, as a couple, when you're seeing a therapist, they need to have either a CSAT credential, that's a certified sex addiction therapist, they need to have an APSATS or some type of trauma-related credential. That could be certified in EMDR therapy. That could be being a clinical trauma professional. Could be APSATS trained to treat trauma. And you also want them to have some type of education and training in treating a couple in general. Maybe they might not know how to treat a couple for sex addiction therapy, but they definitely should have some specific training in couples modalities. So I always recommend to all couples, make sure you ask the therapist that you're seeing, what are their credentials? What are they trained in to treat? Because it's very important when you're dealing with sex addiction treatment. I'm sure you've experienced this. I have had a large number of clients that have come to me after they have been damaged by therapists who were not trained in sex addiction therapy. So out of their own ignorance, they've recommended things, they've blamed the partner, they minimized the addiction, they didn't even know how to assess addiction. And so these couples get more wounded and more time goes by the time they get to somebody who's trained. So in saying that, the reason those credentials are important is there are several things that a couple needs to have, I believe. And the first one is education. You need to really go as a couple and be educated about sex addiction treatment. You also need to get communication skills immediately. So a therapist, that's where the couples training comes in. Now, I also hold a certification in treating the couple. And so I hold all three, to treat the partner, the addict, and the couple, in addition to my other modalities that I'm trained in. So one of the most important things I do with them immediately is I teach them and educate them about sex addiction. I educate them about this topic of abuse and neglect so that they understand what's happening. I minimize it so they're not walking in shame. We set up communication skills. We really have to teach them how to communicate. Also teaching them that when they're upset, how to nurture and take care of themselves when they are upset. It's normal to be angry and disappointed and scared and frustrated and disgusted, right? But when you're feeling those feelings, you need to take care of yourself before you communicate with your partner. And so communication skills is really important to get from your therapist. If your therapist doesn't provide that to you when they're going over their treatment plan and what it looks like, be sure you ask them. So we really want you to teach us how to communicate during the coming days and months so that we know, you know, what to do. And let them train you on how to communicate and take care of yourself. Conflict resolution is going to be a part of that communication teaching. And then, of course, boundaries. Those are the three things that I really think are important: education, communication skills, and then how do we establish boundaries? Sometimes in recovery, Carol, the person struggling with addiction, they feel like, you know what? I have done so many bad things to her, and I have disrupted her entire life. However she wants to treat me, whatever she wants to say to me, whatever she needs to do, I deserve it. I hear that a lot, and what I have to educate them on is, no, you don't deserve to be treated badly regardless of what you've done. And it's very normal that the partner is going to feel rage. They've been hurt so deeply. But I have to teach them that when their rage is coming up, that means they have a need that needs to be met. They need nurturing. Lashing out at the person that hurt you doesn't heal you. And so, you know, that's part of trauma treatment as well, Carol. We have to really educate our clients what's happening, what abuse and neglect looks like, how both people need to understand how to communicate, continue to get educated on sex addiction treatment, and also be able for both of them to create boundaries.
And so can you give us some examples of some boundaries that you think would be particularly helpful for couples where they're experiencing some aggressiveness?
Yes. So, for example, one of the things that are very common is a partner will try to bring up something that's bothering them, right? And I'm just going to use she for the partner right now and he for the addict, but of course I see both. Those can be interchanged. So the person who's the addict, he's going to be not listening to what she has to say. He's going to minimize it, shut it down, doesn't want to talk about it. So he'll create that chaos for her, right? So a boundary for her would be when she's communicating with him would say, listen, I really need to be able to talk to you and share how I'm feeling without you talking over me, interrupting, or yelling at me. And if you can't do that, then I'm not going to be able to talk with you, right? So
yeah,
what's okay. Yeah. Exactly. What's okay and not okay for me, right? So one of the important parts of recovery is having a support system, being in a group, right? Having a sponsor, having other people that you can talk to, because sometimes your partner, it takes a little while for them to really grow in their communication. But you have your boundary that says, look, I'm not going to be spoken to this way. If he's raging or he's hitting something or throwing something or being violent in some way, you just say, look, I'm going to leave the situation right now. I'm going to go take a walk. I'll be back in 15 minutes and I'll talk with you when you're calm, but I'm not going to be in the room with you while you're raging. Right? So that boundary is saying, I want to talk to you, but I'm not going to do it. Right? It's individual responsibility. We are individually responsible to calm ourselves down and be available to create safety for the other person to be able to talk. So sometimes what will happen with where the partner is raging is maybe a person with the addiction says something they don't like. Maybe they're just being happy. Sometimes that will rage a partner. Like, how can you be over there sitting there being happy when I'm over here bleeding to death, right? I'm over here so wounded. Sometimes they'll just be doing something. Sometimes they will be defensive when they're asked a question. Sometimes the partner will discover more acting out behaviors, more lies that they've told. There's a lot of different things that can cause rage to come up very quickly in the partner. So if the partner is yelling and screaming, this is something that I've seen common. They'll yell and scream. They'll call them names. And so the addict, if that's happening, they just need to stay calm and just be able to say, I want to talk to you. I want to hear you. I want to be there for you, but I'm not going to do it while you're yelling at me and calling me names. So again, they let them know where I'm going to go, when I'm going to come back. I'm going to go in the other room for 10 minutes and I'm going to calm down and then I'm going to come back and talk to you. Usually what we see is if both partners, whenever it starts to escalate, will just say, I'm going to go away. Try to keep it to 15 minutes if possible, but I'm going to walk away and calm down. Then I'm going to come back and try to talk again. But both people have to be able to have a voice. A boundary is something that you say, I'm not telling you what to do, right? I'm saying what's okay and not okay for me. You get to decide what you want to do, but I'm going to tell you what's not acceptable for me. Another boundary that's really important is apology, right? You can't treat me badly, and then when it's lunchtime, so you're treating me badly, let's say late morning, you treat me badly in some way. You say something to me. I find out you did something. You're in denial. You won't talk to me. You were abrasive or abusive or aggressive or whatever it may be. And then you never make it right. And then you call me and you want to go have lunch and expect me to be okay. That's very twisted abuse as well. So I teach my clients, things have to be acknowledged. That's part of the abuse cycle. I'm going to abuse you in some way, which is mistreatment. I'm going to treat you wrong in some way, and then I'm never going to acknowledge it, but then later I'm going to take you to lunch, and you're going to act like it's fine and not say anything about it. Well, that's the cycle of abuse, and what breaks that cycle of abuse is when the person who is being abusive says, I said something to you and it was wrong. I yelled and screamed. I shut you down. I hit the refrigerator. I broke that plate. I stormed off in my car. You want them to admit what they did wrong. You want them to apologize. I'm sorry I did that. It was wrong. Please forgive me. And here's my plan not to do it again. So, for example, next time I get upset, I'm going to practice those skills that we learned. Next time I get upset, I'm going to go out and take a 10-minute walk and then come back. So there's some type of affirmation that I acknowledge what just happened. I apologize for it by taking responsibility. And then I give you my plan not to do it again. You're not going to be perfect in this, but there's some type of working together to see that the abuse and neglect only make the trauma for both worse. And really, we've got two people that are hurting in this relationship, and there has to be healing take place, and both have to play a part in that for it to actually happen, for both of them to get their needs met.
Well, and just in the way that you said, obviously, there's all sorts of specialized treatments that can help people. Obviously, when it comes to trauma, EMDR might be an excellent resource. When it comes to anger, or what we call intermittent explosive disorder, which is a disorder that some people suffer by when they just can't tolerate a frustration and they lose control and they do it in a way that produces fear, an anger management specialist may be the person to deal with.
Well, you're exactly right. I'm actually certified in anger management therapy. I think it's a very important part of communication is learning how to acknowledge your anger, which anger is a healthy emotion, right? That's part of the education, Carol, is teaching everybody. It's okay to be angry. It's natural to be angry. Anger says something's not right. But what we have to do is understand that is anger saying something's not right. I have to identify what's not right, and then what do I want to do about it? And so you're exactly right. If you're treating a couple or an addict or a partner separate and you're not treating the unit, and you notice that they just cannot control their anger when, you know, or you're getting feedback from one partner or the other that's saying, hey, he's really out of control. I don't know if he's telling you that or not, but you're gathering some information that's saying he's just not or she's just not really able to manage the anger. Usually I will take the approach of addressing trauma with them because we know that that could be PTSD symptoms. It also could be personality traits. It could be unresolved trauma from childhood, like you said. There's a whole lot of reasons. It could be that they had anger outbursts for many years, but it was overlooked and minimized. So it's just habit. There's a lot of different things that it could be, but I totally agree with you. If you find that somebody is not able to, once you're teaching them how to communicate and calm down, recognize their emotions and work through it, and you have somebody that just can't seem to do it, they definitely need more specialized treatment to address the anger or the trauma specifically.
And, you know, it's not necessarily rocket science. I mean, it's teaching mindfulness, mm-hmm. and it's teaching redirecting, and it's teaching visualization and progressive relaxation and those kinds of things. But it's amazing how when somebody has learned to allow frustration to drive them, they forget that they have the skills to create different behaviors that are going to actually promote good mental health and certainly a feeling of safety. So I think it's amazing that you're certified in anger management because, unfortunately, as you look around the world in general, there is a lot more anger. People are allowing themselves to be a lot angrier than I think we've been in 100 years.
Oh, yes. You know, we're a nation that wants immediate gratification. And so I think we have less patience. We have less self-control. And, you know, we just have to learn that. We have to learn that in relationship. a lot of couples that come to us have never really been mentored how to even have a healthy marriage to begin with. And so there's a lot of things outside of the sex addiction that are usually addressed later down the line. And part of that is just taking that individual responsibility for your own emotions and your own well-being. And instead of the blaming, you know, girl, that's very common. You know, well, I got angry because of what you said, or I got angry because of what you did, or, well, that's okay that you got angry, but what you do when you're angry is what matters. There's a Bible verse, and I'm sure that there's probably other sayings that are similar to this, but what comes to mind for me is there's a Bible verse that says, be angry and sin not. And basically what that's teaching is, it's very normal to be angry, but don't hurt yourself or somebody else when you are angry. That's the key. That's the key with anger management therapy. Recognize that emotion of anger. It's healthy. It's telling you something's not right. Now, what do you want to do with it? And you want to learn how to manage your anger without harming yourself or harming anybody else.
I absolutely believe that. And, you know, let's face it, there are times if somebody can't get a hold of their anger or if relationships continue to be abusive, separating may be the number one, the best thing that one can do to really be able to recenter and focus and learn those skills. You know, sometimes people are too triggered or activated when they're together, and they really need that separation to focus on themselves. So do you have many couples that decide to separate either temporarily or permanently?
I don't have a large number of couples that we do that with, but I absolutely have done it with several couples. So you're exactly right. When we start to gauge that safety is not happening, one or both people just cannot treat each other well, stay calm, manage their emotions, or there's physical aggression, we will either do what's called a therapeutic separation or we'll do a physical separation. So a therapeutic separation can be set up where two people live in the same home, but we really live separate so that there's space between us in order to address the anger and the lack of safety. Or we'll do a physical where one person may move out to live with another family member, maybe move into an apartment, maybe move in with a friend, so that they're actually living separate with the goal. Both separations would have the goal that we're going to learn how to manage our anger and see progress so that we can then move back under the same home and start to engage again. But you're absolutely right. Safety has to be at the forefront. And I'm a firm believer that verbal abuse and emotional abuse is just as damaging, if not more, as physical abuse. So if it's ongoing and we don't see progress in it decreasing, then yes, your therapist should guide you and say, you know, they should be checking in with you. How's your communication going? They should be processing week to week. Tell me what happened this week. Are you doing your conversations? You know, I always recommend 30 minutes every evening to talk. Don't drag it out more than 30 minutes, but to have purposeful conversation. How's that going? You know, if you're dealing with yelling or screaming or whatever it may be, is it decreasing? Is it getting safer? If your therapist isn't noticing that that is progressing, then they absolutely should walk you through how to have a separation.
And again, you and I both believe, although it may not be super common, a separation can be a good thing. It really helps give each other time to focus in on themselves. It takes away some of the stress of having to deal with each other face-to-face 100% of the time. And I find that a lot of my couples appreciate each other when, or let's say, maybe not appreciate each other, but are able to see more of the effort that the person is making from afar. It feels safer to notice the effort. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I actually have a couple that just did a 90-day separation, and he lived with his brother. And during this time, she could not even look at him. And so we just started out with 3 days of some FaceTime where they were short amount of times. And now they are together every day. He's moved back in the home. And she just said almost what you just said to me, Carol. She told me that I just needed that time to be away from him to just get clarity and have some peace so I can process everything. And so sometimes it's very, very helpful. I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, this has been really, really helpful because I always tell my clients, whether they're, you know, sex addiction, partner betrayal clients, or just clients in general, that, you know, there are four types of communication, and it's aggressive, or it's passive aggressive, or it's passive, or it's assertive. And one of the skills that I teach my clients is when it's safe to assert oneself. And that, of course, means being direct about what you feel, need, and believe. Now, it doesn't mean you get what you want, but at least you can walk into a situation, assert yourself, and feel good about that clarity. And sometimes in abusive situations, it's not really safe to assert oneself. And that is absolutely a time when people should be in a separated situation. And, you know, Crystal, I'll tell you a funny story. I had gotten the first edition of the book, and it wasn't published yet, but they wanted me to take a look at it, see if I saw anything wrong. And I was explaining to addicts how a partner's brain can go offline and how they can become all of a sudden aggressive when aggression has never been in the marriage before. And I wanted that person to understand that her brain had gone offline. She was in the amygdala part of her brain. She was fighting. And this was a survival technique. And I read this paragraph as I was reading the entire book over. And then it just jumped to the next thing. And all of a sudden, I realized that I hadn't said to the addict, but know that it's not okay that she hit you, kick you, push you down the stairs, punch you in the middle of the night, all the things that sometimes a partner can find herself doing because she's been, just incredibly traumatized. So it's also important when we look at those four types of communication to put it in perspective and to say, okay, if she's never been aggressive before, but she's being aggressive now, how can we get her to a trauma specialist to help her with that technique? If he has had a history of violence and it's gotten worse, you know, how can we get him to somebody who can help him with his anger management so that she's safe? And we haven't talked about it today, but truly there are couples that, well, we did, you touched on it a pinch when you said there are some people that they feel like they almost deserve to be physically or emotionally punished for what they've done. And so they put up with it and they don't know assertiveness and they don't feel like they believe and or can do assertiveness because they don't deserve to be assertive. And so this is, you know, working with couples can be kind of tricky because of the trauma states that they may each be in. But I definitely think, like you said, communication is the beginning step to developing the other skills one needs to get through any kind of abuse or neglect. So I'm going to ask you, you got 2 minutes. Is there anything else that you would like the listening audience to know? And then, of course, I want them to know how they can get a hold of you and participate in your intensives that you, you know, provide that are just instrumental in getting people catapulted into good mental health.
Well, sure, Carol. I think the most important thing to always remember is that you're both valuable. You're both valuable people. And so getting the education, learning how to communicate, and understanding boundaries for both of you is really essential to healing, not just individually, but to healing the marriage. And of course, I'm in Orlando, Florida. I have offices in Orlando and Tampa. And you can reach me by my phone number, which is 407-408-6521. Of course, my website is h3counseling.com, or you can just put in my name, crystalhollenbeck.com. They both take you to my website. And my three-day intensives, I hold those out of my Orlando office. And I do intensives for anger management intensives. I do trauma treatment intensives. They're three-day intensives. And I also do couples entering into sex addiction intensives. So I do all three of those. They're 3 days. You would fly in here to Orlando, stay in a hotel, and you come over to my office. It's one-on-one. I don't do groups. So I just work with the couples or the individuals and myself. And I appreciate you talking about this important topic today. I think it's something very common that really has to be addressed, and hopefully it'll be helpful to everybody listening as they're working with their therapist.
Absolutely, and I loved how you said earlier, if your therapist doesn't seem to understand some of this stuff, assert yourself with your therapist and say, hey, I get that you may not be comfortable with EMDR, you're not trained, or I get that, you know, you feel like you've gone as far as you can with us in terms of communication, but can you get me to a specialist because we need more help? And there's nothing wrong with that, and that does not downplay the skills of the therapist. It just suggests that you, as a partner or an addict, know what you need best. When you've been exposed to a little of it, you can go for the gusto and ask for more help. So I just so appreciate you today, and keep me posted on what you're doing. And I just want to give a shout out to your intensives, because you know that I've had several people that have gone through them, and they really make a huge difference in the lives of the partner, that's the people that I've referred, and truly it helps them to really clear up and clarify what they need by getting away and getting to spend several days with you. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, Carol. So nice to talk with you today. Thank you so much.
All right. You take care. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, so that again was Crystal Hollenbeck, and she is an amazing therapist out of Florida, and she has her sex addiction certification, she has her APSET certification, she has her sex therapy certification. Now we just found out that she's also skilled in anger management. Take a look at her website. She's got a lot of gifts. Speaking of gifts, I want to say to you that, you know, you are a gift to us because you're on this show, you're listening to the show because you realize how important it is for you to have partner-sensitive treatment. And I got to tell you, I was working with a couple, and the sex addict went back to his therapist, and he said, I'm going to do a disclosure. And he kind of told her what that was about. And she goes, don't do it. Your therapist is crazy. She's going overboard. It's going to kill your wife. And, you know, all I could say to the wife who came back and reported that is therapists are all very good-natured and well-meaning, but sometimes they don't know what they don't know. Get yourself to an APSATS-trained clinician or coach, because I promise you, they've had the training to provide partner trauma treatment. Hey, I'll see you next week. And just remember, there will only be one of you at all times. So fearlessly, have the courage to be yourself. Make it a good week. Talk to you soon.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.